The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back one more time to Afternoons with Mike. It's a very special day to me. Anytime I have my friend Dave Zanotti on the line with me, it's a good day for me. Welcome back, Dave.
Hey, Mike, now that you mention it, how long has this program been on the air?
Well, my program officially started on the 29th of July, 2019. So I've crossed over 2 years now.
The time has really flown, hasn't it?
It really has.
Well, congratulations on making it past 2 years. I think there's something in radio that's like the restaurant business. If you make it past five, it's real. In radio, if you make it past one, it's real. If you make it past two, you're really doing something important. So congratulations.
Well, I hit an anniversary then. That kind of reminds me of something that James Dobson used to say about marriage. He said if a couple makes it past 7 years of marriage, if there are any problems yet in the marriage, it's the husband's fault, he said. So,
well, I will tell you one thing. Yeah, having celebrated a few more anniversaries than that, I remain convinced that there is no way to put the value of marriage at the level that we could truly understand how important it is to personal happiness, to the health and welfare of children, and to the overall welfare for the common good of civil society. There is no way to quantify the immeasurable importance of this at every level. So we talk about anniversaries, talk about marriage. I'll put a plug in, and I can just tell you from personal experience, we're not the same people we were when we got married in some ways. But at the same time, you wake up every day, and what a gift it is. The privilege. It's an honor. I know a lot of people have had unfortunate divorces. A lot of people have lost spouses. So those of us that have the ability to celebrate multiple anniversaries, how grateful we are. It's so important.
It is true. Cindy and I just celebrated 45.
That's amazing.
That's a bunch of years right there, my friend.
Yeah, you know, as much as I was infatuated by my wife the first several years of dating and marriage, The depth, and I used to hear people say this, I go, yeah, right, like that's going to happen to me. The depth of appreciation for her humanity, who she is and how she is unique in all of civilization, this unique human being, just the appreciation grows every single day. And it's just amazing. And it's part of the thing of hanging through life together, and you realize, wow, the stuff we've been through, huh?
That is all for sure. I'm very grateful for our marriages and grateful for you. I got this text from you yesterday, as a matter of fact, and I was shocked at the title and the outlook of this article that came from NPR. And as you sent it to me, I mean, anytime you send me something like this, I'm instantly intrigued. I start to look at it and I'm thinking, well, this certainly doesn't seem like even the news that I would have heard this morning, you know, on some of the reports that I've read about from the national news front, from the White House or whatever. And it had to do with an outlook about COVID and how that the outlook is actually pretty encouraging. I don't think Americans have had that kind of encouraging news in a long time, Dave.
Well, it's quite surprising, Mike, and it was strategic, and I think it's worth analyzing in great detail. Now, it's interesting because two big stories broke yesterday, one out of Gainesville that you all broke on the Mark Network through Main Street Daily News. And that was the story regarding the mandatory vaccines being overruled by a local judge. In regards to the city employees. That's a very big story. And these are the sort of things that are happening all over the country now as people take a serious look at public policy ramifications of political edicts in regards to trying to force employers on how to run their business in relationship to COVID-19. So that was a huge story, and I was very excited about that. I sent you this one because at 4:45 a.m., on September 22nd, a story broke on NPR. And it's very specific. The language in this is, and I've got the original. They've already changed from the original document. We saved the original one. And usually when someone within 24 hours begins to modify their story on the online fashion, it's because something's been exposed. Either it's incomplete, it's incorrect, or something's been exposed. Well, NPR is already starting to shape shift this story. But let me talk to you from the original. They were very candid in admitting, NPR was, that the CDC has come to them. In fact, the Delta surge appears to be peaking nationally. This is a quote. And cases and deaths will likely decline steadily now through the spring without a significant winter surge. According to a new analysis shared with NPR by a consortium of researchers advising the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In other words, the CDC and their modelers came specifically and intentionally to NPR and showed them new models on what they anticipate this is all going to look like. And remarkably, the most important and significant front model that they showed that from September 11th, 2021, or just a few weeks ago, that within 6 months tops, by March 12th, 2022, the cases anticipated of COVID-19 will be below the number of March 2020.
Now, you know, when you hear that kind of thing, that is just not at all in line with the narrative that we hear almost daily. Those that watch news, I don't anymore, not daily anyway. And when I do, Dave, I have this thing that it's almost like a flinch, if you will. I'm already reaching to turn it off when I'm listening to it. And even if it's only
very difficult,
it's tough. It's tough to hear.
Well, that's why things like Main Street Daily and other sources are so critically important, because we have to be able to separate news sources and real news and real facts from narratives. And of course, there's never been, since World War II, a more propaganda-driven narrative foisted upon our country than what's happened in these last 2 years with COVID-19. Now, that's not to say that COVID-19 isn't real. Of course it is. It's a real novel coronavirus that's hit the human race, and we have to deal with it every single day. And that's all logical, and that's all scientific. But the narrative that has been foisted upon us, beginning with false models by the CDC and by others in the individual states, false models that were designed to create a sense of panic and fear that scarred people as they were learning about this and enabled politicians to manipulate them. Now, in the beginning, some people could say, well, they thought they were doing a good thing, but it didn't take very long for the models to blow up, for us to realize something wasn't accurate, and for the facts to begin to come out. And we have lived in a battle between the facts and the narrative, Mike, for almost 2 years now, and it has cost our country dearly. It has cost us untold billions of dollars, and it has cost us untold millions of relationships where people have virtually lost their minds, their good sense, and even their Christian character, and divorced themselves from each other over the narrative of a mask or a mandated vaccine, when none of this was necessary at all. Not because the virus wasn't real, but because if we had defined it accurately and with a certain sense of calm and maturity, if we had sought God, looked at the facts, and then sat down together and say, how can we love each other and protect each other, we could have solved this problem. But it was instantly turned into a political weapon by politicians who saw a window of opportunity to use a crisis. And it speaks to the terrible hole in our bucket in our country. And that bucket is leadership. The hole is the corruption of public parties and the corruptions of people that are more interested in power than they are in truth. And so we've had to deal with that. Now, this article comes out. It was the models that brought us all to the lockdowns, and the models were false. Now the models are out again. Now, these models may all be false. I have no trust whatsoever in the modelers, except for the fact that it looks like this time they're trapped by reality. We've got what happened to the Delta variant in Israel, what happened to the Delta variant across Europe, and particularly in England and London. And we know for a fact that the Delta variant has now begun to run its course. The CDC and Johns Hopkins has told us consecutively for the last 4 weeks that we have reached a peak. No one's covered that story at all. And we know once the virus peaks for consecutive weeks in a number of cases, it will begin to decline. That is scientifically predictable. It's been predictable. This is the third wave. We've seen it with the coronavirus. And now the charts front and center, released by CDC to NPR 4:45 a.m. yesterday, shows their model that we are going to see the end of this pandemic within 180 days. That's not their worst case scenario. It's not their best case scenario. It's the one they're basically saying looks most realistic. They put a couple of exceptions in. One being, if another variant arises that no one sees right now, that could change things. But so far, so good, no one's seen one. And here's the reason that it's happening, Mike. They finally have come to acknowledge the fact that so many people have recovered from COVID, that natural immunities in the culture are so strong, along with the temporary immunities of our therapeutic forms of vaccines, which wear off, but are effective for a period of time, that in essence, the virus is running out of places to go. And when that happens, we have reached herd immunity and pandemics end. Doesn't mean people still won't get sick, but it'll be a lot more now, according to this model, these researchers, it'll be a lot more like having the flu. It's always going to be with us, but it's much more manageable.
And you know, Dave, when it comes down to this thing about the pandemic, it was something that was declared to be, and it seems now that it's going to have to be something that is declared not to be. And the question is going to be, who is going to step up? Is anybody going to step up to the plate and say, hey, this thing is officially over. We can go home and put the kids to bed in freedom and joy, and this thing's over. It doesn't seem like anybody in government wants to do that, except maybe in a few states like Florida, where thankfully we have some people standing up and saying, we're not going to do this fear thing.
Well, Mike, what actually happened with this article is, if you take a look at the COVID battlefield, and it's tragic to call it a battlefield, but that's what it's become. If you used a battlefield illustration, what you see way over in the corner up here is a white flag that is rising up from the flank of the COVID, the pro-COVID army, if you will. And that flag is now rising each day with more research into a much higher prominence. It's a truce flag, if you will. It's an admission that the state of emergency, the narratives, the panics, all the mandates suddenly may not be necessary. Now, what are they doing? The CDC has suffered probably irreparable harm to their reputation, and models were a big part of what started it all. Well, they're coming clean, if you will, by releasing this information carefully through one selected media source so it can begin to drip, drip, drip out into the culture and build. Today, we see stories about the fact that they're acknowledging the shelf life of the existing vaccines and that you can still get COVID when the vaccine wears out. But people aren't dying at any greater rate than they were before, which is less than 1% or less. In other words, all the things that those of us that have tried to be more balanced on this have been exposing and saying that are counter-narrative, they're beginning to adopt. And the reason for that is they don't want to look like total idiots 180 days from now, demanding employers fire employees, fining employers $1,400 a day for every instance where they don't have someone being able to prove their vaccine cards, mandatory vaccine cards to get into events. They don't want to look like idiots when everyone looks around and says, excuse me, there are no cases. We're clearly out of this thing. So they're beginning to shift the narrative now. And this is how they do it. It's a trial balloon. This is how they begin to let the information out. And then they turn around 3 months from now and you go, well, what about this? They go, oh, yeah, we told you that 3 months ago. You just weren't paying attention. That's how they do things. This is how PR firms advise government agencies on how to get their way out of corners that they've painted themselves into. And this is precisely what is beginning to happen right now.
Well, you know, Dave, when you talk about trying to get out of a bad place, a bad corner, and you're trying to back out, it is to the benefit of those pro-coronavirus people that the news media is so complicit, and they're giving everything to the story, the narrative, and so the news media really helps them back out, don't they?
Well, they do, this is sadly, again, it didn't turn into a challenge that every human faces, and how can we love each other and help solve the problem for everyone? It turned very quickly into a massive power situation. And that's why, Mike, we've suffered through this thing without anyone making a major move toward therapeutics. Certainly, Donald Trump tried, but the absorption of his task force was to get the vaccine available. And that was an important step. There's still significant controversy about this vaccine. I think that what we're going to see very quickly is that it's now going to be used more as a therapeutic because people have come to realize that this vaccine is a genetic therapy that relates to your immune system as it relates to COVID-19, but it's not the sort of thing that's going to, you take the shot once and never have to worry about it again. It's not the traditional attenuated virus vaccine. It's something different, and now we're learning what that something different actually is doing. And what we're finding out very quickly is that it has a shelf life. So it's not bulletproof. But these kinds of treatments and therapies, which we need more of, better ones, and we need to be objective about the ones that we have, all play a part in essence, bringing some level of immunity against the virus into culture. And that ultimately adds up. Example, we right now have, according to CDC statistics, over 40 million people that have had the virus that have been basically counted for. But they honestly admit there's at least another 80 million at least that have had it. So it's really somewhere in the neighborhood of 120 million of us have experienced this. We have 180 million people that have two-shot vaccinations. Mike, that is up to 300 million people. Now, there's certainly going to be some overlap. We get that. But there's only 336 million people in the country. So if you take the fact out that there's well over 60 million kids under the age of 18 who are not prone to either get this or to be anything more than asymptomatic and certainly very, very little risk, we're kind of getting to the place where you have to admit we've got a lot of immunity built into this culture. So it would make sense that unless another variant or two pops up that we don't have immunity for, that we'll still have to get and go through, we're at herd immunity or community immunity, whatever you want to call it. But ultimately, this article makes it perfectly clear that at the end of the day, the way that you overcome this is through immunity. One of the experts in the article says this, immunity always wins out eventually. That's a quote from the NPR article. Well, immunity's here. Okay. They're saying in the next 180 days, you're going to see the slide, barring some super big surprises. And even if we have the super big surprises, what will we do with the variants? We'll get it, we'll recover from it, and we'll continue to battle just like we have every other virus. So the bottom line is they've got to get this balloon that they've sent out there that's terrified people. They got to get the thing to the ground, Mike, and they're letting the air out of it. It started 4:45 a.m. on September 22nd, and we wanted to put a big wide note on that for the world to see because the narrative is changing, and this is coming straight from the CDC.
My guest today is Dave Zanotti from the Public Square, and his analysis is so helpful. We're going to continue this. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. It is always fun to have Dave Zanotti on the program with me today, and Dave has been giving us the insights into this NPR article that came out. And it was really great news, came out on the morning, early morning of the 22nd. So that's at this air date, that's 2 days ago, about 48 hours ago, Dave, this thing breaks. And with it is what is really nothing less than shockingly good news. Even some of the NPR comments that were made was very positive, very excited. And I believe that's the way that our country, at least in our minds, we would have always thought our leaders would be excited about if something bad was ending and the siege was over or a plague was ended. You would think that would be joyful. But right now it looks like NPR is backing this story down.
They're modifying the language, Mike, in their additional online publications. But the core of this is the COVID-19 Scenario Modeling Hub, and that's a part of the CDC. It's a consortium of researchers from a number of universities that CDC uses to create models. Now, models got us into a lot of trouble on this thing because the original models were not just a little off, they were way off. And particularly at Easter time in the year 2020, terrible models were sold to the President of the United States by Drs. Fauci and Birx, anticipating, predicting that unless he continued the lockdowns that we'd have 2 million dead people from COVID. Well, thanks be to God, we don't have 2 million dead people. We have more than we should, and it's sad, and no one's denying that reality. But we understand what's happening here much more clearly. Now the COVID-19 Scenario Modeling Hub has made it very clear that within 180 days, they are projecting that deaths will drop below 100 per day and will drop back to where they were at the very beginning of the pandemic in March of 2020. So we've got a number of researchers that participated in the interview, and basically what they're saying is that immunity ultimately wins out, and there's no way to deny the fact that America has a tremendous amount of immunity built up now through people having gotten the disease, the original disease, then the variant disease, and then through the addition of vaccination, all of which was designed to build up what's called herd immunity so that the virus would basically have no one left to infect. Now, the one big place, Mike, where we have really failed is in regards to therapeutics. Because this virus is going to be around, the virus from 1918, the Spanish flu, H1N1, is still here. People are getting flu vaccines to this very hour that include vaccination against forms and variants of the Spanish flu. So once a coronavirus gets into human culture, it ultimately never completely disappears, but it drops so far out of sight in regards to cases, and that when you have a 99% recovery rate, it's just like getting sick, pretty much like the flu, the cough, the cold, and the other common coronaviruses. That's always been where this thing is headed, unless it was so dramatically engineered in the Chinese labs that it had far more power and was really far more of an alien form than anything we'd ever seen. So far, that's not the case. So far, that's not the case. So the optimism that is in this article is real. Of course, the researchers are being very careful to not be caught being overly optimistic. They always have, you know, the downside, the knock on wood, the let's not get too excited here. Let's lower our eyebrows and tighten our lab coats. But, you know, Mike, we've got to stop teasing each other. This is virology 101. We were always going to get out of this. We were always going to get out of this because it's not that lethal. Johns Hopkins said from the very beginning, 99% of the people would recover with mild symptoms, and that has proven to be true. Thanks be to God. So the question is, as a culture, can we handle good news?
That's a great question. Can we handle good news? And maybe a follow-up question would be, will we be allowed to receive good news? That's the big thing that I'd like to know, because it seems at times that the people that we draw the news from or the people that we're looking to for leadership are the ones that's been leading us in a path that is proven to be not helpful, not true. And, you know, just recently, Dave, there's been this big resurgence now over Dr. Fauci and his involvement in the Wuhan lab and even with the national health. And so we have all of these questions, and I can only imagine what the news media would have done had such questions ever arisen over Donald Trump or any Republican for that matter, but especially President Trump. If that would have come out that he had been involved somehow, can you imagine what it would have just been like the Greyhounds were sick too, a blood trail. That's what it would have been like in the news media.
Well, if anything, Mike, this has shown what a dangerous position we're in regards to our core integrity. Our country is designed to operate through the auspices of we the people. And it is presumed upon a document that makes a confession that there are self-evident truths that we all pretty much agree to, in the understanding that there is a creator, there is a God, and that all of us will stand accountable to him someday for how we deal with one another. Well, unfortunately, that American founding worldview has disappeared for many in modern culture, and COVID has exposed the depths and the barrenness of the dregs of the godless equation as a worldview, because what's happened is a moderate virus with 99% recovery rate was seized upon by what I call the monster media, created into a scary nightmare beyond imagination, beyond the facts, beyond the science, seized upon by political consultants and power brokers, and then driven into our culture to divide us, to pick winners and losers, and to use all of that to influence the outcome of elections and the outcome of two administrations. That is craziness. That is frightening stuff. I'd go so far as to say that's evil. And now we've got to decide whether or not, as people of faith, we're going to overcome evil by doing good, by standing up, by telling the truth, for standing for each other, and to stop the political manipulation of this virus. I'll give you an example on how. We're right now having a fight about monoclonal antibodies. They're being rationed in a socialistic fashion by the federal government. This is nonsense. We need to find every possible source to create solid, scientific, proven monoclonal antibodies and to get them out to states in an abundance of resource so that anyone who contracts COVID-19 can get those monoclonal antibodies and get them quickly. Secondly, we must end the barrenness on testing. Mike, in across the country, I get reports every day of people who can't get a COVID test. They can't get COVID tests because the politicians have made COVID testing a necessity to get into so many ball games and concerts that people who actually get sick can't get in. You do mandatory vaccines or you have to have a test every day. We take up all the testing so the people who are healthy are getting tests. The people who are sick are waiting 5 days. Now, if they've got any comorbidities that this could accelerate, they're 5 days in. It's too late for the monoclonal antibodies to actually have good impact. They've got to fight to get those. They're 10 days into the disease, and now they're on their way to the hospital, when if we had had enough testing available for everyone and had enough monoclonal antibodies available for everyone, these people would be home and well in 10 days or some scenario like that. See, we're going in the wrong direction against common sense, and we've got to stop people from running this like it's some kind of a socialistic game plan.
I just saw a video this morning, Dave, about the new Surgeon General that has been put in by Governor DeSantis stood and said that the day where we respond and react in the news and with policy to fear is over. We're not going to respond to fear. We're not going to be led by fear. I think we have just most everybody that I know of needs to hear that, and they want to hear that.
Oh, Mike, from his ears or his lips to God's ears, for the first 20 episodes of COVID Chronicles, and I think we now are somewhere around 28 or 29 of the episodes, for at least the first 20, for at least the first year, we tried every day to quote, "He has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love, power, and a sound mind." We were so triggered into fear on this. And look, shame on all of us for being so easily pushed around by fear. And you know, we were our mental and spiritual antibodies were extremely low, and we were susceptible to the fear, and we bought the fear, and then we politicized the fear, and then we let fear control elections, and it was terrible what we have done to ourselves. But it's time to come out of the fear cycle. For goodness sakes, we put a man on the moon. We put a lot of people on the moon. We've put men and women into space that have done extraordinary things. We won World War II. I mean, we've done all these things over all these years. We survived the Spanish flu of 1918. From the beginning, our hope and faith should have been in God. We should have repented, begged God for mercy, asked him to show us how to deal with one another and that love and service prevail. We must get out of the bondage of fear, and we need to look at each other in the face again and ask God for help. I could not agree more with the Surgeon General. We need to hear that message everywhere.
We do need to hear it, and I believe that at least in Florida, we're going to be hearing that more and more. And I'm grateful also to hear the news in Alachua County, where the judge there basically told Alachua County, you can't do the vaccine mandates as you're planning to do them. And so those things are now out. And will this have, do you feel, a ripple effect around the country?
Well, it should, Mike, because first off, in Florida, we have a cause for state action because the state has said we're not going to do this. But we also have a federal cause. So there should be both state and federal cases presented that show the clear overreach of either the federal administration or any other administration that attempts to force employers to work against the best interests of their employees and their personal rights to private property in regards to how they run their business. There's a fundamental core ethic in all of this, that it is never right for the government to force someone to take medicine that they sincerely do not want to take. This is the core bedrock principle. You say, well, if you don't take this vaccine, you might die. Yes, you might. But whose decision is that? Because if the government can make you take a vaccine against your will and you have a 99% recovery, what will happen when something comes along that maybe only has a 75% recovery or a 98% recovery? Do you see the pattern that we're establishing? It's dangerous.
You know, when we see that pattern of the way the government is coming out and saying things, there's without a doubt a loss of confidence. You kind of referred to that earlier about how it's something that we've, I believe, held for many, many years, most of my life. I would say that, generally speaking, I would not have seen this kind of doublespeak coming from the federal government in my entire life. I can't think of a single instance. People do not trust our own government, and I think for lots of good reason.
I can't blame them. I really can't blame them. And a big part of this has to be understood in the context of our history. George Washington and John Adams warned us against human nature multiplied by political parties. They basically said the worst thing that could happen, one of the worst things that could happen to this country would be for it to become a nation where the civil government, the national government, becomes a contest between two competing parties. That is the kind of discord that they knew would tear our nation apart. And it's the sort of discord that God talks about in the Bible, that people who sow discord among brethren, that's something that God hates. Now, how does it apply to something like healthcare? We've been doing healthcare policy every day since 1994, and we've been in this field of public policy for 42 years now, since 1980. What happens when government makes choices for individuals, they end up picking winners and losers, and that is not the role of civil government. And when government moves masses of amounts of money into the federal level and then into the federal administration or the bureaucracy, politicians become more interested in controlling the flow of that money and the benefits of that money being spent. And then the lobbyists come in and they take care of people. And then the way you stay in power is not by public service to your constituents, but by making sure that the lobbyists who provide tons of money to political campaigns are happy with your performance. And then you can go back and convince the constituents why you're the right person. That's the exact opposite of how civil government is supposed to work. Our public servants are supposed to represent the worldview, the ideals, and the issues that we care about first and foremost. They're to be our extension. Now, I can't condemn every politician because there's not enough competition. In other words, Christians in our generation have sat back and said, let the parties take care of it. We'll play this like shirts and skins. It'll be reds and blues. If I agree with the reds, then they'll carry my water. If I agree with the blues, then they'll carry my water. And I can basically phone in my opinion, throw a few bucks at the process, vote every 2 years, and it should take care of itself. Well, COVID has blown up that ideal in its entirety. It doesn't work. When Donald Trump went to Washington, D.C., he called it a swamp. He was wrong. It's an ocean. It is an ocean of detached corruption that is far from our Declaration, far from our Constitution. You know, Mike, right now at the National Archives, there are trigger warnings being placed upon certain statues and displays. There's even conversation of putting a disclaimer on the reading of the Constitution and the Declaration that it may trigger certain racial stereotypes and uncomfortableness in people. They're literally trying to PC up and critical race theory, our Constitution and our Declaration at the National Archives. The members of Congress should be standing in the aisles. They should be marching on the National Archives and saying, over our dead bodies, you will put any other words on top of our Constitution than the words that the people have placed there legally, according to law, under no circumstances, because every member of Congress swore on oath as their primary service to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. But we've got Congress people that are far more concerned about everything else but protecting the core reality of who we are as a people. That's what's wrong with America, and that's what we've got to fix.
That's what we have to fix, and we're going to pick that back up in the next segment. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today, Dave Zanotti from American Policy Roundtable. We'll be right back. So enjoyed my chat today with Dave Zanotti. Dave, you know, as we look over this whole scenario that we are at the end of segment two, we're talking about some of the original intentions that the founders gave us, and they really are being just ignored. They're being bypassed. It's like they're being thrown away. I mean, the very notion that an asterisk could be added to words from the Constitution and the National Archives, all of this seems so crazy. And it, you know, we know that elections come, elections go. We've talked about this often. Elections have consequences, and boy, are we seeing those consequences happen right now. My question to you right now is, with all that is happening with President Biden right now, and all that is on his plate, and it's growing, this thing at the border, it's not going to go away, apparently. If the news media has done anything right, it might be they're picking up on some of the pressure about our national border. What are you thinking about what Biden can do? What should he do? What do you think he will do with regards to the border?
Well, he won't do anything, Mike, and nor will the Republicans. This has been a problem in our country since the 80s, and it divides into multiple camps. For example, there's a lot of Republicans that look the other way on illegal immigration because there are businesses, big businesses that need cheap labor, and this is one of the ways that they get it. Now, people don't like hearing that, but that's true. Now, the other thing is, of course, the Democrats believe that people who come here illegally and find their way into the system eventually will become citizens and will vote Democrat. You see what happens when you take a common issue like the integrity of a national border, which is simply critical. It's fundamental. It's public policy 101. And you divide it by the interests of political parties. Mike, I tell you, when it comes to immigration, we've said this often. If we had two boxes of donuts, two pots of coffee, and about six people who we would pick randomly out of the phone book and sat them down and explained the challenges of our southern border and our immigration question, you give them probably a box and a half of donuts time and a pot of coffee, and they could fix the problem. Because they don't have a vested interest other than let's figure out how to solve the problem and do the right thing. The problem isn't that we don't need more people in our country. We do. Our population, our repopulation rate, our birth rate is below repopulation level. We need people in America. And the problem isn't that the people that are coming in are god-awful horrible. No, they're people just like you and me. There are wonderful people who want to come. They want to come here because they want a better life. What's wrong with that? That's how America's always been. The problem is, the politicians will not let us touch the process and solve it in such a way that these people can come legally in a safe and balanced system. And then how do we deal with the 12 million or more people who are here who did break the law? How do we rectify that? How do we reconcile that problem and give them a a safe standing here in this country, whether they ever get citizenship or not. That's something we should put on the table. We should talk about it. What seems fair? How can we reach consensus? And then move forward. The problems can be solved. The political parties will not let them be solved because they both are taking advantage of the problem. That's, Mike, that's a hard truth. And, and you're going to have members, conservative members of Congress going to sit there and scream bloody murder when we call this out. And they'll say, no, we can't fix it because we've got a majority of Democrats in the House and that would fix it. Wait a minute. The Republicans have had majorities in the House multiple times since 1980, and they haven't fixed it when they had clear majorities.
Well, they had it in 2016 when President Trump became president.
They could have never had more momentum than that right there, and they did not touch the issue.
Well, not only that issue, Dave, but when I think back about it, what they must be feeling like, and this has been some of the things that, you know, from my limited cheap seat view, it just made no sense to me at all that they just let things go. And then 2018 happened, midterm elections. Now the Democrats are controlling the House again, Nancy Pelosi back in again. And we get the next 2 years is nonstop basically trial of Donald Trump in the court of whether he's going to be impeached or not. And all of these other issues are just bubbling under the surface, but they have a way of bubbling out of the surface.
Mike, the answer to all of this is we need constitutionalists to run for public office. Now, it's tough to run and win for Congress the first time. So what would be really smart is for people to start saying, I'm going to run for city council, I'm going to run for county commissioner, I'm going to run for county mayor, and I'm going to work my way up. I'm going to build a constituency of people that love me and I love them in my home base, and then I'm going to run for Congress. Every 2 years, I'm going to run for Congress till I win. Now, there are other people right now, if they threw their hat in the race, they could win in their district right now. If we could find constitutionalists who would take public service in America as seriously as they take any other mission given to them by God, and love their neighbor and make a life commitment, and if the people of faith would respond by supporting those people and helping them, how can you help them? You help them with childcare. You can help them with rides. You can help them by supporting them. Maybe some people need to, who have landscaping businesses, should make a special care to make sure that the landscaping's done, that the guy running for Congress doesn't have to go ahead and mow his own lawn. Somebody come by and give him help, or help people who are trying to serve our country. Make a commitment as a congregation that civil government and leadership is as important as any other missionary outreach of our church. And forget whether they're Republicans or Democrats. It is meaningless. The parties today only serve as a secretarial desk to file papers and as a checkbook to get money. A candidate doesn't need either one. You can run as a Democrat, Republican, an independent, or a Martian. It doesn't matter. Be a constitutionalist. Be one who will stand for the Constitution, the Declaration, and the principles upon which those documents were founded. And then be a problem solver. And we can elect so many people to Congress that the current leadership will disappear and we'll look back and say, wow, this is an American Congress again. We knew an American Congress in our lifetime. You go back to the 1960s and the early 1970s, and the United States Congress was not divided as it is today. There were people from all different flavors, if you will, in the Congress, and we had a much more balanced approach to civil government than we have today. We've got to get back there, Mike.
I believe with the grace of God we can, and it is going to be interesting to see how his will unfolds in all of this. And I'm praying that, you know, it's really fun because I've had, since I've been able to have these times with you on my program, there have been a lot of conversations I've had where people are indeed running for some of those offices that you mentioned.
Just this week, Mike, we heard from four people. Yeah, just this week we heard from four people that are running for, not for Congress, but they're running for state legislature or city or county government. Four people from across the country called this week, and they've already filed the papers. It's exciting. I mean, we've got, and Mike, this can happen one county at a time. If you think about the outreach of your program and the number of counties in Florida that it reaches, if a handful of congregations in every county came forward with a mission of restoring public service as a part of the mission of the church, to be salt and light, forget the political parties. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. All right, if we've got someone who truly believes is running in this party because that's the best way for them to get elected at the moment, go do it and then redefine the office. It doesn't matter. Quit judging based on the shirt color. Doesn't matter whether they wear red or blue. It doesn't matter what's in their heart. How will they vote? Now, if a person gets into office and doesn't vote according to what they promised, then they get the heave-ho. That's fine. We bring somebody else right up underneath them. This is what the establishment is terrified of. This is what frightens them the most, Mike, that they would lose control back to the people who would be willing to pay the price to serve again.
Well, that's how this country was founded in the very beginning, was people who were willing to put it all on the line. And it may well be that we are going to do just exactly that again. Before you go today, I've got to ask you a question about bringing this back down to where we are on this day and forward. We've talked about this article, and NPR has come out with these facts that doctors are saying, and it's proven by the numbers that things are on the decline. We've got now the rest of 2021, and then next year will obviously be the heavy year of midterm elections. A lot is going to be riding for those who keep this narrative going. What do you see happening between now and then with this, the abilities, let's say, for either the president or for Fauci or for any of these other guys that are leading this way with the talk on COVID? What's going to happen between now and the election of 2022?
Well, the election of 22 will be the first opportunity Americans will have for a COVID accountability election. And that's a big deal. And where there are candidates that are running on the truth, I think they stand a very good opportunity of winning, whether it's in county offices or city offices in 21 or for the United States Congress in 22. But you can't beat something with nothing. And so the question is, have we had enough time to get candidates into that pipeline? There's still time for qualified people to run and to serve. So it depends on how many candidates that we get in, whether or not people who are going to be constitutionalists will fill up the spots. Now, again, this is not something that's going to happen in a heartbeat. We've been talking about this for 42 years, Mike. The answer hasn't changed. What's changed is, for the first time in a long time, American people are thinking that they have got to change. Instead of pointing fingers at their government, which has failed them dramatically and across the board, they're saying, I can't change them. I've got to change me. And when I start making that change myself, I realize we've got to bring people into the civil process to change the entire thing. So it will depend, Mike, on how well people accept the issue of personal responsibility, organize, and move forward. Am I optimistic? Look, Mike, this will take a miracle, because it will take changed hearts and changed minds. It's what we live to pray for every single day, that we will become salt and light again in our culture and once again bear witness to Jesus Christ through love of neighbor in public service. And it's going to take the rest of our lives.
My dad used to ask me a question at times. He says, do you think it's going to get worse before it gets better? I'd like to ask that question of you. Do you think it's going to get worse before it gets better?
Yes, I do. And it will get worse because there's still not enough of us that have accepted personal responsibility. But I will tell you, there are more today than there were 2 years ago. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is something that we have to look for, those little pockets of optimism and things for which we know we can be grateful for. As believers, honestly, I don't know how I'd be dealing with any of this if I weren't a believer and if I didn't have trust in God. I just don't know how bad it would be in my own heart and in my own mind. And I know I'm wanting to throw things at the TV as it is whenever I do turn something on. I can't imagine what it would be like without having faith in the Lord.
Mike, we're not in this alone, but at the same time, God won't vote this year or next year because he delegated civil government to us, and we are being disciplined by a kind and benevolent Heavenly Father. We have denied our responsibilities that he gave us, and he's never retracted those responsibilities. We've denied them for so long that now our sin is at our own peril. And until we accept the fact that if we want this pain to stop, we've got to change, our Heavenly Father is going to continue to let us suffer because that's how he disciplines his children. I guess the question is, pastors, leaders, small group leaders, Christians, when are we going to wake up?
When are we going to wake up and do what is right? I think of the Bible verse that says, judgment begins at the house of God. And that's something that all of our listeners, it can begin with us. You know, if there's going to be in the old lines of the old song, if there's going to be peace on earth, let it begin with me. And that's not a bad thought for us to come here to this. One final question in my 1 minute that we've got left here with you, Dave. This issue of the vaccine mandate, do you feel from a standpoint of how things are going, do you feel that Biden's, I guess you could say his ultimatum is going to hold?
No, not at all. The CDC report that came out through NPR this week throws the president's ideas under the bus. It's not going to be possible to get judges at the state and federal level to permit this kind of extraordinary anti-constitutional behavior when we are at the diminishment of a national emergency. We got through this far. Why on earth would we now take such an extra anti-constitutional measure when we're already out? We're on our way out of the program, out of the problem, and the CDC has now published that reality. I think it's we have to keep fighting it every single day because it'll take a while for people to understand it. But no, Mike, there's no way. Constitutionally, no matter whether we were in a hurricane of a pandemic or now that we're at the end of it, there's no way in the world that our courts would permit this.
And that is one encouraging thought, and I'm praying that that is just spot on right, my friend. Dave Zanotti, it's always great to have you on the program. Thank you for being with me yet another time.
Thank you, friend. It's a privilege, and may God bless all your listeners and all the wonderful people that listen to the radio stations connected to The Shepherd and to Mark. We really appreciate it.
God bless you, Dave. And friends, thank you for joining us. We'll catch you next week on Afternoons with Mike.